I'm Jeannie Holzbacher, and on behalf of myself and my fabulous co-host, Jill Wright, we want to welcome you to Executive Shine, Conversations That Count. We search the planet to bring you some of the most dynamic leaders in various industries who often only have one thing in common: uncommonly outrageous positive impact on people and businesses. They are leaving this world a much better place. So kick back and join us. Grab a few insights you can immediately apply to leverage your leadership and foster greater connection in a world that's become increasingly disconnected. They so desperately need you to shine your light bright. Cheers. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Conversations That Count. And we have a double bonus for you tonight because we have not one guest, but two, Drs. Dale and Leanne Foster from Memphis, Tennessee. And they are here to give us some really profound insight and wisdom on one, how to change the story in your head, which then changes your brain chemistry, and two, how to find your limitless brain. I actually dug into the chapters of they each wrote in Codes of Longevity, and they're going to have a lot to share with us. So we have 55 power-packed minutes, and we're going to go ahead and get started. So my first question for the two of you is, how did you even get into this?
Well, I got into, first of all, let me say, I'm not a doctor. I'm a master's level psychologist. So I don't want to take credit for something I didn't do. But I got into it because I had a life of trauma as a childhood. And, you know, like so many of us do, we come at what we do because we're trying to get ourselves better and heal ourselves. And so I found tools along the way that worked and want to share them with other people.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And how did you guys meet? First tell how you started, but I want to know the story.
Well, I was, I had a younger brother growing up who was 2 years younger than I, who had severe cerebral palsy. And he was unable to walk or talk or control his movements or feed himself. But I knew he was as intelligent, probably more intelligent than I was. But we would watch comedies together, and he got the jokes before I did. So I thought, this, you know, I knew him. He was my closest sibling. So we were closest buddies. And I learned early in life that it was his brain, and there was something wrong with his brain. And there was specific regions of his brain that were causing him not to be able to function like a normal person. And so I became very interested in how the brain works and the possibility of fixing it, and became interested in psychology and neuroscience, and found some really good tools that will help anyone optimize their brains, beginning to understand now that that's the key to longevity. If you don't have your brain optimized, then you're not going to have longevity. So you have to have that as part of your package. The brain, if you can optimize your body for longevity and you don't optimize your brain, you don't want to live with a healthy body without a brain. And so they go together. And so I'm a neuropsychologist, and I help people fix their brains. But I also, my biggest pleasure is helping people optimize their brains. Finding your optimal brain is your quest in life. Finding your optimal life, your optimal happiness. I called it the Goldilocks brain. If you want to find happiness, you tune your brain up as best as you can. It's not about perfectionism. It's about finding your personal flow. You have flow that nobody else has, and you can feel it, and you can find it, and you can optimize it, and you can find tools that help you tune it up when it gets out of tune. And that's what I do. I help people optimize their brains so they can find flow.
I love that. And what I noticed, if you would share with our listeners a little bit about, first of all, what a gift your brother was to you, because look at all the people you now impact because you had him for a brother. Mm-hmm. And when I was reading your chapter, I one of the things that really stood out to me was the personalized precision happy plan. So tell people a little bit about that, because I'm very interested.
Yeah, exactly. You can't rely on anybody else to tell you what's going to make you happy. You have to find it. I mean, you can find out what makes other people happy, and that can be clues, and that can help you along the way. But ultimately, you have to accept personal responsibility for your own happiness and become what we call an N of one scientist. There's only one person who is in touch with your experience, and that's you. And so being able to observe your experience and clarify your experience and develop some equanimity while you observe your experience until eventually you have more and more unitive experience, because that's what happiness is. Happiness is when you have found ways to defragment your trauma, because we've all had trauma. We've been broken. I mean, the entire life of a human being is traumatic. Birth is traumatic. Culture traumatizes us. Our education traumatizes us. Our health problems traumatize us. Relationships traumatize us. So if you don't have enough putting yourself back together, you're going to fall apart. And you can do that on purpose. I call it habituating unitive experience, developing habits that continuously unify your experience, give you unitive, and the feelings you get when you have unitive experience are those we all are familiar with. Love and joy and peace. I mean, you can find those in all of the master's writings. That's what happiness is, when we find ways to personalize our approach to that. Personalizing it means I'm going to have connections with other people that nobody else has. I'm going to have my own experience that nobody else has. I'm going to have my own DNA that's completely unique to me. And so I can look at those things as patterns. You know, we do epigenetic coaching. Leanne is certified as an epigenetic coach. So she can look at your genetics and your history and your lifestyle and your behavior. And we can be very scientific about what's going to help you feel better, function better. And those are basic physiological needs that eventually help you experience more precision happiness. If I've got an illness, you know, I can be happy in spite of the illness, but I can be happier without that illness. So it's about health in all areas, interpersonal health, physical health, mental health, spiritual health, and finding your way is going to be a very unique pathway. Your journey is unique. As you well know, it's going to have to be unique. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I'm so happy that we were able to have you guys on the show today, because look at what's going on in the world right now. You know, we just had a huge situation in Boulder where they had a big shooting, and one of my contacts from the airport, she called me the next morning and she's like, oh, it's terrible what happened in Boulder. And I said, you know what? It wouldn't have happened if that person was healthy and he needed love.
Yeah.
And that's so, like, in my business, you know, it's called Executive Shine. It's all about the love. But what you guys are doing is giving people hope and showing them the tools that they can create that happiness, that optimum life. And what a gift that you can do it together. That's amazing. How did that all evolve?
Wow.
You know, I was going to get back to the story.
Yeah. You know, I moved to Memphis, Tennessee, in a really bad relationship and got away from it quickly. And I needed a hammer to move into an apartment, and I didn't have any tools. And a friend took me to a friend of his house, and Dale just happened to be there. And we just met in passing as I was looking for a hammer, and I got him.
Oh, wow. That's
fantastic. You know, because of, you know, we married, we have two amazing kids, but because of the trauma that I had from literally birth on, I was born with a mother who was 18 and gave me up for adoption. And I've since found her and I love her, but you know, that was trauma. and then had a lot of trauma in the family that adopted me. And because of all that, we had kind of a rocky marriage for a while. And so, you know, the work that we do here and some of the psychedelic psychotherapy that's now available, it really helped me get rid of those trauma filters so that I could see him for him instead of seeing him as, you know, my abuser. Yeah. So we've had, you know, we've been married for 27 years now. But the last 3 years since all of this work that we've done has been like a honeymoon all over again. So it's a whole new world.
And she's never hit me with a hammer. Nor have I hit her with a hammer.
So. Never.
Never. Never planned to. We do use our tools on each other, though.
We do.
When we get a new technique or a new piece of equipment or a new technology, we study it together and practice on each other and validate it before we try it on anyone else.
That's awesome. Oh, it looks like we lost Jeannie.
Oh, no.
Well, that's weird. Okay, well, we'll just continue talking. So we've been working. We had Matt on the show, and he talked about, you know, the whole happiness formula. And this is really a big deal now. And I loved your chapter, Leanne, and talking about how, in spite of the fact that you have those traumas, you also create stories about the traumas.
Yeah. That's those filters, boy, you know, and what I realized when I went through this experience was that I had these stories going on in my head about what the world was like and what other people were like, you know, and even though I came to understand in my brain that those stories weren't accurate, I couldn't get my body and my emotions and my being to agree with my brain.
Yes.
Until we broke through with the psychedelic psychotherapy.
Wow. Tell me a little bit about that, because I'm really interested in that.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that they're seeing with brain imaging and some of the psychedelics is that, so we have this default mode network in our brain. And we used to think when we weren't actively involved in a task that the brain powered down, but that's not what happens. When we're not actively involved in a task, that default mode network powers up and it's running our unconscious story and it's making it more and more ingrained, right? Well, with the psychedelics, it takes that default mode network offline and you have an opportunity to tell a new story that your body will now believe. So the brain and body can come together. You know, like before the show, we were talking, if you just do affirmations and your experience and your body don't believe that, your bullshit meter goes off, right?
Right.
And then you've got internal incoherence. You're not agreeing with yourself. And so in my experience, doing that psychedelic psychotherapy really helped my body and brain come into alignment with the truth.
That's very key. Is the truth. And you hold those, you know, the stories that you create that, so tell the listeners, I understand a little bit about that. You hold those stories in different places in your body.
Yeah.
So not just in your brain. A lot of people think it's just in your brain, but talk about the therapy that you do to be able to release those stories from where you have them held on to them in your body.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the tools that we use are actually kind of going through the back door of the physiology. So we're tapping into the brain, we're tapping into the nervous system. And so we can bring those to rest, right? Instead of being on guard and hypervigilant and opposing what's coming in, we can bring the brain and body to rest and that nervous system so that now they're open to a new story, because all those those defense mechanisms are down because they are in the body. We can't separate brain and body. We talk about them like they can be separated, and that's just not accurate.
No,
you know?
No, it's not. And
but to answer your question, the techniques we use, you can consider one of them called heart rate variability. And the goal of that training is a type of biofeedback, but the goal of the training is what we call coherent breathing. Coherence, as you know, is when systems are actually working together and optimized. So when we teach someone, we're always starting with the breath. And coherent breathing helps bring the heart and the lungs and the breath and the brain into a measurable state of coherence. So that's the beauty of biofeedback. You can measure coherence and you can feed it back to the individual and they can upgrade their internal biofeedback so that they don't need the computer anymore after a while. And they walk around and live their lives literally in a greater state of coherence, of measurable higher coherence. And with the psychedelic psychotherapy, one of the things that they've shown after that is that the coherence in the brain improves. The ability for the networks to connect and communicate with each other. And on a personality test, your openness, a basic personality characteristic that is very stable over time, but with psychedelic psychotherapy, that increases dramatically. You're now open to anything, change, learning, love. And beforehand, our default mode network keeps us tightened down because that's who we are. We're going to defend it. We're going to avoid and deny. But with that kind of therapy, if it's done properly, then you literally become more open. Your brain becomes more coherent and you launch yourself onto a whole new level of opportunity for learning and growth and evolution. And that's really exciting.
That's amazing. Talk to me about some of the how long does that take when a patient just comes to you? I know it depends on kind of like where they're at, but that's really fascinating. So I want to hear more about, how you go through that process.
Go ahead.
So it really depends on what you come in with. So we have people come in with, we treat veterans with multiple traumatic brain injuries, post-traumatic stress disorder, and years of suffering. And so, you'd expect it to take a while. And so we work at least 30 sessions and we have transformed people's lives. And we just spoke to one of our veterans yesterday. And he said, 2 years ago last week, I had a gun in my mouth and I was about to pull the trigger. And he says, now I'm about to become a therapist and my life is now free from trauma and I've never been happier. And now I'm trying to help other people. So he did the work. He did the work for 2 years, lots of different kinds of work. And his life is brand new. He never thought he could feel so good. He had some childhood trauma too before he had combat trauma, but it's possible to transform even that severe a case. Other people might come in and they're not sick. They just want to improve focus and attention, or an athlete might want to improve their reaction time, or someone might want to just improve their mood.
Yeah.
So it depends on the individual. That's why we call it precision, personalized precision happiness, because we actually measure your systems. We measure muscle tension and brain waves and breath and personality and reaction. And we can measure all that. We don't do all of it to everyone, but we can measure, quantify, and then make a plan based on as much science as we have. And watching their personal progress, we can estimate, how long it's going to take at this rate. And we can modify it as we go, but we can be pretty precise in what we need to do for any individual. But it needs to be personalized. It's not, there's no one size fits all when you're talking about happiness. It has to be personal and precision in the sense of we measure, we quantify as best as we can, and we continuously measure. We look at improvements and measure those and track progress as best as we can.
Yeah, that's amazing. How do people, you want to talk on that a little bit too, Leanne?
Well, you know, I just wanted to say that it's really interesting to me to see people come in with different kinds of pain. There's so much pain now in the world. And it's kind of exciting to see what we do because we can peel back the layers of pain. You know, many times it's not obvious what the physiological reason is for pain. And so people will go to doctors and they'll basically tell them, well, you need to get on psychiatric medication. But when we use our tools, we can oftentimes see things in the brain that the doctors aren't seeing at all. And we see physiological reasons for their pain, you know, but then we also have the story that contributes to the pain and the stress and the anxiety. And what I love about what we get to do, what we're honored to do, is help people learn how to be their own healer, because everybody has everything they need in them. But we just have these cool tools that help them see how they're doing with their healing capacity and exercise it so it gets better.
Absolutely. No, that's amazing. And these, the developments that we can do now, and I love what you said about how you're teaching people to be their own healer. Mm-hmm. And to choose also their own stories. So if I was a listener and I'm just tuning in, how would I, like, how do you tell people to gauge what does, I know for me, I follow what feels life-giving to me. And that, and when I do that, things just come and life just works. And I can't explain it, but you guys have some real science and education behind those things to really explain. How do you do that? And how does a listener look at, like, what's life-giving? And how do they find that and then choose those thoughts and train themselves over and over again to do that?
Yeah. I think the first thing is just helping people be in touch with their own body. I mean, it's surprising how many of us are not in touch with our own body. And then trusting ourselves that, you know, so many people, I mean, you clearly trust yourself that when you feel something's a yes, you trust yourself to go with it and good things happen. But a lot of people, when they feel something's a yes, they guilt kicks in, you know, or I don't deserve to feel good and all this old story stuff, right? So that first step is, like Dale said, you know, getting people in touch with the breath and the body so that they can get practice at feeling themselves. And then starting some of that mindset work, right? And helping people overcome some of those old programs of guilt and not trusting oneself.
Yeah.
And it's different for everybody, that work.
Yeah, yeah. The stories we create are the biggest, one, some of the biggest things that keep us not only from connection with other people, where, you know, I do a lot of work with connection, but also from, like you said, connection with yourself. You know, when you can speak your truth, then you can really connect. So talk about that too, and how you help people to do that.
So I think one of the most beautiful therapeutic modalities in the world is called internal family systems therapy. And people can look that up online. There's YouTube videos. They can look for a therapist who's trained in that modality, or even just a practitioner, not necessarily a, you know, counselor. But it's about, there are, we all have parts, right? I'm not a unified personality. And our language shows us this, right? Like, part of me loves that. Part of me wants to do that. Part of me is afraid of doing that, right? So we have parts of ourselves. And if we learn how to love those parts of ourselves, right, and have healthy, loving, encouraging self-talk, oh my goodness, Like if we taught every child from the beginning of their life how to have healthy, encouraging self-talk and how to honor the different feelings and emotions they have when, even when they're at odds, we would have a totally different world.
Oh my gosh, yes. Absolutely. Because I go ahead.
Yeah, I like to help people learn the language of flow. Everybody is in flow to some degree just to be biologically alive. there's a certain amount of flow that you can just experience getting in touch with your own breath. And I encourage people to use that word. Sometimes you think it's reserved for elite athletes who do spectacular things, but that's not the kind of flow that everybody's going to have. You don't have to risk your neck to have flow. In fact, that's not a good idea for most of us. That would not be flow. Yeah. That would be fear.
Yeah.
So finding flow, finding your personal feeling, like you called it, what's life giving, you know, what people call following your bliss, getting into your zone, you know, the Goldilocks zone when things are just right. And it's not all or nothing. It's more or less. And it's not have to be someplace or I can't be there anywhere. It's like I can start everywhere and forever I begin again. And every moment is an opportunity to settle into letting what's happening happen and stop fighting against what I can't control. And then relaxing into how I can flow with my own purpose for the moment. I've got a purpose for this moment. And if I can just relax and let go of all the other stuff, I'm going to find my purpose for this moment. But so many times I'm listening to everybody else tell me what I'm supposed to do or worried about something in the past or the future, and I'm not even in the moment. So learning how to find flow, living in the moment, and feeling it and trusting yourself, trusting your own internal barometer, your own internal gyroscope that's, you know, it's a little off here, a little off in it, and it's fun. It's like you're constantly dynamically adjusting and changing anyway. That's part of life. And so you can just sit back and watch that. Nature takes care of it. And that can be flow for you. Just sitting back and breathing. That can be flow. You could also find flow being creative. I don't know if you saw in my chapter about one of the problems with our brains as we age is we lose our right brain function. It deteriorates quicker than our left. And the reason is we get educated with language and pattern matching and that kind of stuff. And our right brain is the thing that just creates stuff out of nothing. It dips into the quantum field of all possibilities and comes up with stuff. Well, somewhere in our lifetime, we stop being creative and we just settle into what we've always thought. And our right brain starts going south.
Yeah. But
people who remain creative, interpersonally creative, occupationally creative, any way you want to be creative, your right brain doesn't deteriorate. So if you want to live a long time and keep your brain healthy, stay creative. Get more creative. If you're not creative yet, start being creative. Find something that gives you joy, that does something new for you. Doesn't have to be Mozart or Michelangelo. Just do something that gives you joy and is new. It's new every morning. That's something in the scripture. You know, you're new. There's a newness every moment. And when you get in touch with that, it's good for your brain and it increases your lifespan and it decreases the odds you're going to get dementia. So if only for that, do it. But do it for the fun. And that's one of the things I instill is if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. And most of us go around thinking we need to be miserable because if we have fun, we should feel guilty. So that's some of that garbage, that old story up there. You shouldn't be having so much fun, you know? My parents kind of gave me that impression a lot of times because I had a lot of fun. It pushed a lot of boundaries, but, you know, I think it was good for me and probably a little bit good for them too. But having fun, I think, is the key. And flow. Flow and fun and balance. And I help people learn that language. We might use something like coherence when we're measuring it, or optimizing a network. We're working on the brain. But it has to boil down to fun. It has to boil down to flow. It has to boil down to nobody knows if you're having fun but you. So you got to find it yourself. I can help, but you're the one in there. You're the only one. And I tell kids all the time, you're the only one in there. You know, we're out here trying to help, but you're in there. You're the ones making that go with your work. And so taking that personal responsibility and finding flow and make it a lifestyle, a creative lifestyle.
Well, and your tagline, it's all about the love.
Yeah.
I mean, that is huge because, you know, we could have hedonistic fun and that really doesn't serve us. But that fun that's so that we can make it all about the love and the unity, that breeds purpose and meaning, and it just makes everything more amazing.
Yeah, the only real fun is when everybody's having fun too. And if you're having fun at the expense of someone else, that's not real fun. Yeah, that's right. Not a unitive experience. That's a fragmented experience, a disconnected experience, and that's going to be traumatic. And somehow you're going to have to put that back together. You're going to have to fix that because you're broken and you're breaking other people when you're having fun at somebody else's expense. You have to have join in the fun of the universe. The universe is having fun. The universe is expanding and it's accelerating. It's expanding faster and faster. So you don't have to do anything. You can just settle into what the universe is doing, and that can be your fun. And that's being creative because the universe is new every plank second. I mean, that's pretty quick. You don't have much time to waste. Get in touch with that flow.
Well, and staying in that state of wonder and teaching. I have a lot of friends that are in higher education and different things, and we talk about this, that when they're young, these people, nobody's teaching kids to think. So I want to talk about that. Let's take a quick break. We'll have a quick commercial. And then when we come back, let's talk about the work you're doing with kids and giving them the freedom to tap into what's inside of them and to discover what their joy is and how they can create that. So we will be right back.
Okay. Are you ready to be ageless and live limitless? Unlock your codes of longevity and discover how to age in reverse. Look and feel years younger, perform at your peak, and express boundless energy, vitality, and joy. This and so much more is possible because it's no longer a question of if we're living longer. We are living longer. The question is, how well do you want to live beginning today so that you can flourish and thrive at any age and any stage of life? This book brings together more than 20 of today's health and longevity leaders to share with you the secrets that exist within so that you truly can unlock your code and you can live your long life well beginning today. So now is your time to go to codesoflongevity.com to order your copy so that you truly can look, feel, and live life optimized to 120 and beyond.
And I'm so grateful to Melissa for being able to bring us together, because originally, you know, she just asked me to write my chapter in the book. But the biggest gift from all of this has been meeting all of you. I'm like, wow, these people are amazing. And I've been able to make some really good lifetime friends. So I'm so excited. So we're back talking about how to tap into that. How are you helping young people and all people really tap into that?
Well, as a neuroscientist, a neuropsychologist, we have identified functional hubs of experience in the brain. It's not that the brain is isolated from anything. It's a whole system. It's, you know, the brain is not just in the head. It's in every cell of the body, and it's connected to everything. But there's a primary function that if you don't have it, you're in big trouble. And that's called focus. If you can't pay attention, if you can't direct your focus, you don't have free will. And when you can direct your attention and focus and concentrate, your free will expands. That's one of the basic factors of humanity is we've got free will. And we can actually parlay what we've got into more and more freedom. And we do a lot with children with learning and attention problems, attention deficit disorder, learning disorders. And there's a really good neuroscience that there are functional networks in the brain that correlate with those disorders. If you've got an attentional problem, we're probably going to find that the attention networks in your brain are dysregulated. And we can measure it and we can show it back to that person in such a way that they can improve that function. Like we can target their left prefrontal cortex, which is a major part of the attention network. That's where free will kind of, that's where our driver sits. You know, it's connected to everything, but that's kind of where our driver sits. And we can work that out like a muscle, just like you pick up a dumbbell and do curls and your bicep gets bigger. You can work out your left prefrontal cortex and your focus and attention can expand. And when I do that with children who've got all kinds of learning problems, all they need most of the time is to improve their focus and concentration and attention. And the learning problems go away if they've got a good environment and all the other systems are good. And it's amazing how that just changes lives. Typically, a child will go to a doctor and they'll get drugged, and then they've got a lifetime of problems, a new set of problems. And totally. They come back later as an adult and we can still help them. But wouldn't it have been nice if they had had a childhood that was drug-free and they could use their function of attention and focus just like anybody else without the need for being drugged? And that's what our culture and our society has to get. We don't need to be drugging our children.
Yeah.
We need to be freeing them to live optimally, and that's what our tools can help with.
And there's lifestyle components too, right? Mm-hmm. Like not everybody can access the neurofeedback that we do, but people can pay attention to the food that their kids are eating, right? There's too much sugar going around, too much inflammatory, too much chemicals in processed food. They aren't getting out in the sunshine enough. The sunshine is a big health tool. It's so important. We don't need to be afraid of it, right? Use appropriate caution to not get burned, but we need sunshine. And, you know, this blue light technology, we were talking about this the other day. Technology is wonderful. I'm so grateful for it. But we have unwittingly affected our kids' brains and the focus and attention by the blue light that is emitting from computers and devices that is literally decreasing their ability to focus and attend. And so we've got to learn, you know, I've heard that Bill Gates and Steve Jobs wouldn't let their kids on technology because they knew that it was going to create some problems. And there's a book called Mindset by Dr. Carol Dweck. And I tell you, that book is so good. And I look at that and wish I would have had that when I raised my kids, because our oldest is just naturally super brilliant. And we would just, you know, we and other people would say, you're so smart. And we would end up rewarding her for what she then thought was innate ability, instead of rewarding her and making it fun for her to do something and not do it well. You know, Melissa, our wonderful Melissa, she said something to me one time that has stuck with me. She said, anything worth doing well is worth doing really crappy at first. And I think if we helped our kids have that frustration tolerance and know that failure is a learning process, we would help them learn how to focus and pay attention and not get so perfectionistic.
Absolutely. It's that state of wonder and that freedom. I love what you said about focus equals freedom, because I am like all about freedom. absolutely unemployable. And speaking of free, it looks like we have Jeannie back. But yes. If you can think about that and use those techniques and just experience things that it's okay. There's a no judgment zone. You know, I do an experiential thing, and Jeannie came with me a couple weeks ago where we brought 20 people in and we taught them in a team setting to shine each other's shoes. Oh. Well, they're terrible at it. And that's okay. That's part of the thing. You know, that's exactly that. But I didn't really know all of the things. I didn't think about that aspect of it. So that makes such a difference for them to have that freedom to explore and sense of wonder. Like, what would it be like to do that? And that I've got a very large dose of that as a child, and I was really rebellious, you know, a little bit like you there, Dale. But, and I definitely gave my parents run for their money, but I'm so grateful that I've maintained that in my life, because I find life fascinating, and being able to help other people to look at things in a different way and expand their impact. And when you teach them to explore without judgment and to learn, then they understand it's fun to learn. Yeah. And they might like it. They might not like it. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So yeah. Welcome, Jeannie. So I still can't hear you. Are you unmuted?
We have never had that before, have we?
Oh, no. That was you.
Everything just went black. But that's okay. We always find a way back around, Jill.
Sometimes she has green hair. I'm telling you, the things we have overcome.
We have overcome. I got stuck with these eyebrow things. They said, try the eyebrow things. But what they didn't tell me, you guys, was once you do it, unless you undo it, you have to chase your eyebrows the whole time to stay in alignment. Because every time you move. So one show, that's what I was doing, was chasing my eyebrows. And I'm just like, people, you're just going to learn that perfection is disconnection, right, Jill? And so we're not about perfection. If we're such a hot mess and we can do this, anybody can.
That's awesome.
Absolutely true. It's so keep talking about that. I want to talk about how can parents set that up for their kids?
Wow. You know, I guess.
I know that's a big question.
Well, I know, but our kids don't so much listen to what we say. They watch what we do. And as we, as parents, learn to get over ourselves and see failure as just an opportunity to learn and to experiment and to get out there and just try stuff. And Dale's mom had the biggest gift of laughing at herself. Like, that was one of her biggest gifts to the world. And if we could all stop taking ourselves so seriously and just try new stuff and laugh at ourselves and have fun, that's huge. Our kids would eat that up.
Which brings up one of the things that I encourage people to do is practice laughing. If you don't have enough spontaneous laughter, you just got to practice. You habituate being able to laugh at just look in the mirror and laugh at yourself. There's always something worth laughing at if you look at yourself in the mirror. So it's a simple task, but I encourage people to practice that on a regular basis. I understand there's a sect of monks who does that as his discipline. It's a daily laughter at themselves. And I think that's a good practice.
I think that means Jill and I are closet monks.
No, you're not in the closet. You're out.
Oh, that's so awesome. That is the best tip I've ever heard. I love that. Because I love to laugh and I love funny things and I love to be just in joy and being just radically silly with people. And it's something. What does that actually do in your brain? That's interesting to me, because it seems like what it does, I think, what I've seen personality wise from a non-doctor is that when people laugh, their resistance goes away. And then they can be them. Then the real, their real self comes out. And that's what's really fun for me, is to put people in situations like that. And so that they don't even know it. And then this happens. And then they have this great experience. And then they're great. It's one of my keys to success in business. Then this great success, this mind memory is connected with you. And they want to come back and do it again.
Yeah.
You know, so I got to write that. Ooh, I'm going to practice that. Laughing at myself in the mirror. I love it.
It's what you're doing is you're habituating unitive experience. Unitive experience is what resolves our trauma.
Really?
Children are born with a natural love of life. Unless they're traumatized, they'll never lose it. They'll love life. They'll laugh. They'll be creative. You can't stop them. But unfortunately, we get trauma after trauma after trauma. And then you got to work real hard to put yourself back together. But the natural state of humanity is happiness and laughter and fun and creativity and expansion. It's our culture and our habits that put us down and break us down. And we fit our poor kids into these molds, and we sit them down in chairs. We make them sit there all day long while somebody talks at them. I mean, that's trauma. I had it, you know. And I think we have to undo that. You know, when you get to be an adult, it's your responsibility to say, I've been bent this way. You know, it's not anybody's fault. You know, it's just the way things are. And if I'm gonna have a happier life, I'm gonna have to defrag. I'm gonna have to have unitive experience, and I'm gonna have to find ways to do that. And I'm gonna have to habituate. That's what meditation does. That's what singing does. That's what community does. That's what creativity does. It's unitive experience which resolves your trauma, and then you can get back on track. And that is joining with the universe and its purpose, which is to evolve consciousness. With fun. It's supposed to be having as much fun as possible. And when you get into flow, that's what it feels like. It feels like fun, flow, joy, happiness. And it's something that you don't keep for yourself. You feel like sharing it and joining with everybody. And it's the big party. We all want to show up. You have to wake up though to show up. And then you have to do a little growing up to keep up. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. It doesn't end. There's no end to it. There's no perfection. It's just a ongoing journey that we want to help each other be on. And that's the fun. And laughing along the way is part of it.
I love it.
You know,
back to the kids, I was just thinking how our language, we encourage and we tell kids they're doing a good job. We give them encouragement for doing something well instead of just being who they are. And if we can help one another get a better language as we're raising our kids and just love them for who they are and encourage them for who they are and be lighter and happier and less serious about what they're doing, maybe we could make some impact.
Wow, I love that. I've never heard anybody articulate that about good job. Like, wow, that's really something to think about, you know, and to let them be feel seen for just being.
Yeah.
And not necessarily for doing. I know, Jeannie, you've been working on that too with the language thing.
Big time. And the other thing I noticed when he talked about community is, you know, Jill, when we were away a couple weeks ago with some of your employees, I think it was great. Please understand, it was absolutely wonderful to be able to do the things we did on that Sunday workshop. We had people come up to us afterwards and say things like, I haven't stepped foot inside a church in a year, and I felt like this was worship. Thank you for allowing me to be who I really am. And they were saying stuff that we did not anticipate. But before we got to that Sunday, what stood out to me, Jill, was Gaytu and Zaid and some of your other employees. They created community for us when we showed up. I mean, they gave us an entire Ethiopian feast. We sat around. We broke bread their way. What is it? Injera bread?
Yeah.
We talked. They shared their lives. And I'm thinking, for me, that's what it comes down to. It's about connection. You know, all the intellect in the world doesn't replace the need for connection and what it does inside my brain and inside my heart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All about the love.
It's so true. And that's why I'm passionate about culture and I'm passionate about people having fun at work. Now I'm going to rethink that word. I might take work out of my vocabulary.
You could get away with it. Get away with it.
Yeah, I really like that because that's how it feels. And I've lived that way for 33 years since I've been in business. Since I go to work to play with people.
That's awesome.
Doesn't matter. Supreme Court justices, whatever, you know, I want to know what's it like underneath that cloak. I want to know, you know, all of these things. And that just takes people, you know, out of that left brain, like you said, Dale, into that like, wow, I gotta think about this. And it's a new way and take them into that creative space. I love that.
Play for money.
What do you guys think as we're wrapping things up tonight? What do you think is the number one or two things that people miss the most that they just, that's a simple concept that they're not getting, that they're making more difficult than it needs to be?
I think developing an appreciation for just existing is a fundamental skill we miss.
Okay.
You know, just to appreciate that I'm alive and I'm in this breath right here and right now, and I don't have to do anything to appreciate life itself.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think we miss loving ourselves.
Mm.
We miss loving ourselves. I mean, that self-loathing is such a huge pandemic. Talk about a pandemic.
One of my friends that has like a health and wellness based on food and nutrition said that two of the things that he wants you to eliminate from your diet first are shame and guilt.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's true.
Toxic. Yeah. You have to eliminate those toxins, and most of our toxins are related to our thinking.
Yeah.
Is it ever too late to do that?
Oh no. We help people detox all the time. That's part of our program. Detox in every way.
How can people reach you? We're going to have links in our information, but for those listening, how could they reach out to you?
So our website is neurosource.net, and our email and phone number are on the website, and super happy to chat with people.
Neurosource.net.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you so much. I apologize for my absence and then Aww. My re-entry. This was a new one for our books, Jill. But it was such a pleasure to chat with you and to have you on tonight. I'm sure we'll probably have to have you back again sometime because I'm going to be digging a little bit more into your website because you guys fascinate me.
Well, you guys are awesome.
Yes.
I love your energy. I love your love. I love your humor. And you all have the gift of just putting people at ease. And that's amazing.
It's been an honor and fun to be with you.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. That's what we do. We have fun.
I love it.
That's the key.
But if it's not fun, hire it done. That's my rule.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, my motto, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. I think you guys are doing it right.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm so excited for our audience to connect with you. Neurosource.net.
Net.
Because people need to have access to this information, because you're really changing the world and you're really giving people hope. And that's the kind of people that we want to have on the show, because people need to know there's all kinds of fun solutions out there. And great people to help them with those solutions, like you.
That's right.
All right. So thank you so much. Well, I guess until next time, we will see you later. Have a wonderful rest of the week.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jill. Bye. Thank you, Jeannie.
All right. Bye.